Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope. Do you sometimes feel sorry for yourself? Sorry for yourself because of many responsibilities, many problems, many unpleasant situations? Don't worry. Don't feel sorry for yourself. Happiness, serenity, even a more satisfying life will come to you in greater degree as the load you carry grows weightier. The natural way to live is under a load. As soon as a baby can walk, he wants to carry something. Ever think of that? Sometimes you may pick up a load too heavy, may get him down, may fall on top of it, but he's happy. Even then, he has something to struggle with. Under your load, you are anchored and growing. You won't drift rudderless. A ship in ballast is an easy prey to winds and waves. A cargo gives her steadiness and aids the ship to safety, helps keep a true course. Likewise, the biggest handicap for a human being is moving through life with no steadying cargo. The young man with responsibilities will survive in shifting economic seas. Without a load, he's liable to sink. A man with no responsibilities flirts with doom. He'd better pick up a load at once. The workers survive. The shirkers often sink. Abraham Lincoln scaled the magnificent summits of greatness, carrying responsibilities too heavy for most men to bear. But Lincoln's heart and soul grew until they were capable of tremendous understanding. The burdens he carried only broadened his shoulders and deepened his great sympathies and tolerance for fellow men. Under his crushing load, he was yet able to lift up a bleeding nation and carry it to peace and safety. Had no burdens been thrust upon him, the great Lincoln might well have never have attained any greatness at all. Young and old are still lifted up by heavy, useful loads. Those who refuse responsibility may grow fat, but they lose the heights of greatness. They come crashing down to valleys of despair, smashed because they carried no load. A life with no burdens is an empty life, a useless life. But differently, those who disdain burdens during youth and middle age will ultimately bear burdens they never chose, despair, and the crushing burden of loneliness. The loads we try to avoid can often smash us. For responsibilities evaded in youth will come the regrets of old age. So when you next begin to feel sorry for yourself, to feel you bear more than your just share of burdens, stop, think, take inventories, be thankful that God has given you the strength and courage and ability to overcome whatever problem arises to confront you. If you have many responsibilities, you're much more fortunate than the man who has none. Don't waste time envying the other man. He deserves pity, not envy. Do you find life interesting and gratifying? Or are you unhappy because there seem to be many displeasing situations in your life? You don't know how to change them. Has it ever occurred to you that what now brings heartache and disappointment, disillusion, even disgust, may perhaps actually be the growing pains of eventual progress and attainment of what you want in life? Get the habit of looking at what now seems disheartening as unpleasant simply as a growing pain. Suddenly things won't appear nearly so difficult. It's amazing. Obstacles can be turned into opportunity. Tremendous opportunity for growth and for happiness. Don't you remember your growing pains of childhood? Don't you remember that finally someone told you those pains in the legs meant you were getting bigger? Yes. And you were. At that time, wasn't the objective of getting bigger your heart's desire? Remember how all at once then the growing pains stopped? And they did. That's part of life, too. Why must we take the growing pains of adult life so much more seriously than those of childhood? There's no reason for it. After all, if we take the attitude that we are stronger than any problem, that any situation contains its solution, tremendously effect it does. Our whole life is changed. Yes, the way to grow toward the light is like When Nature Wants a Man by Angela Morgan. When nature wants to drill a man and thrill a man and skill a man. When nature wants to mold a man to play the noblest part. When she yearns with all her heart to create so great and bold a man that all the world shall praise. Watch her method, watch her ways. How she ruthlessly perfects, whom she royally elects. How she hammers him and hurts him, and with mighty blows converts him into trial shapes of clay, which only nature understands. While his tortured heart is crying, and he lifts beseeching hands. How she bends but never breaks, when his good she undertakes. How she uses whom she chooses, and with every purpose fuses him, by every art induces him, to try his splendor out. Yes, nature knows what she's about. When nature wants to take a man and shake a man, wake a man. When nature wants to make a man to do the future's will, when she tries with all her skill, and she yearns with all her soul to create him large and whole, with what cunning she prepares him, how she goads, never spares him, how she whets him and frets him, and in poverty begets him, how she often disappoints whom she sacredly anoints, with what wisdom she will hide him, never minding what betide him, though his genius sob with slighting, and his pride may not forget, bids him struggle harder yet, makes him lonely, so that only God's high messages shall reach him, so that she may surely teach him what the hierarchy planned, though he may not understand, gives him passions to command, how remorselessly she spurs him, with terrific ardor stirs him, when she poignantly prefers him. Yes, when nature wants to shame a man and fame a man and tame a man, when nature wants to shame a man to do his heavenly best, when she tries the highest test that her reckoning may bring, when she reins him and constrains him, so his body scarce contains him, while she fires him and inspires him, keeps him yearning, ever burning for a tantalizing goal, lures and lacerates his soul, sets the challenge for his spirit, draws it higher when he's near it, makes a jungle that he clear it, makes a desert that he fear it, and subdue it if he can. So doth nature make a man, then to test his spirit's wrath, hurls a mountain in his path, puts a bitter choice before him, climb or perish, so she says. Watch her purpose, watch her ways. Nature's plan is wondrous kind, could we understand her mind. Fools are they who call her blind. When his feet are torn and bleeding, and his highest powers speeding, blazing newer paths and fine. Yes, when the force that is divine leaps to challenge every failure, and his ardor still is sweet, and love and hope are burning in the presence of defeat, lo the crisis, lo the shout that must call the leader out. When the people need salvation, doth he come to lead the nation? Thus doth nature show her plan, when the world has found a man. Yes, let me repeat some of this poem, which shows so clearly how important are the loads we bear, how necessary to the growth of our soul. When nature wants to drill a man and thrill a man and skill a man, when nature wants to mold a man to play the noblest part, when she yearns with all her heart to create so great and bold a man that all the world shall praise, watch her method, watch her ways, how she ruthlessly perfects whom she royally elects, how she hammers him and hurts him, and with mighty blows converts him to trial shapes of clay, which only nature understands. While his tortured heart is crying, he lifts beseeching hands, how she bends but never breaks. When his good she undertakes, how she uses whom she chooses, as every purpose fuses him, by every art induces him, to try his splendor out. Nature knows what she's about. When nature wants to take a man and shake a man and wake a man, when nature wants to make a man to do the future's will, when she tries with all her skill, she yearns with all her soul to create him large and whole. With what cunning she prepares him, how she goads and never spares him, how she whets him and frets him, and poverty begets him, how she often disappoints whom she sacredly anoints, with what wisdom she will hide him, never minding what betide him, though his genius sob with slighting, and his pride may not forget. Bids him struggle harder yet, makes him lonely, so that only God's high messages shall reach him, so that she may surely teach him what the hierarchy planned, though he may not understand, gives him passions to command, how remorselessly she spurs him, with terrific ardor stirs him, when she poignantly prefers him. Yes, when nature wants to shame a man and fame a man and tame a man, when nature wants to shame a man to do his heavenly best, when she tries the highest test that her reckoning may bring, when she reins him and constrains him so his body scarce contains him, while she fires him and inspires him, keeps him yearning, ever burning for a tantalizing goal, lures and lacerates his soul, sets a challenge for his spirit, draws it higher when he's near it, makes a jungle that he clear it, makes a desert that he fear it, and subdue it if he can. So doth nature make a man, then to test his spirit's wrath, hurls the mountain in his path, puts a bitter choice before him, climb or perish, so she says, watch her purpose, watch her ways. Nature's plan is wondrous kind, could we understand her mind. Fools are they who call her blind, when his feet are torn and bleeding, yet his highest power's speeding, blazing newer paths and finer. When the force that is divine leaps to challenge every failure, and his ardor still is sweet, and love and hope are burning in the presence of defeat, lo the crisis, lo the shout that must call the leader out. When the people need salvation, doth he come to lead the nation. Thus doth nature show her plan, when the world has found a man, and every one of us is that man. Friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
Listen again tomorrow, friends, for another message of hope with Richard Eaton. This is UBC, the United Broadcasting Company.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it'll come. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Hey there, everyone. My name is Jordan from Happen Films, and this is a $420 tiny house. Let's check it out.
This beautiful structure behind us is the house that we built over the course of about 3 months out of pretty much entirely recycled materials. So the total cost of the house is about $420 if you include the petrol money that went into it.
The size is about 2.5 by 2.5 meters, 6.25 square.
We went by dumpsters from demolition sites. We looked on the website Gumtree. We ended up getting pretty much everything we needed to build a whole house just for free.
So we decided to try and build our home with just hand tools.
Yeah, we tried to. We didn't manage to in the end. There were a couple of things that were too difficult for us to do with the tools that we had and the skills that we had.
So we ended up having to use a power drill and an impact driver.
We had to make 5 purchases. We bought some cement for the foundations, some steel bracing tape because it was a bit wonky, some screws for the roof, a little tub of wood glue to make some window frames. We bought chains to hold the windows open. Oh, we bought the 6 things. We bought some hinges.
So we were using salvaged paper insulation to try and line the whole house, and we ran out. We were just short and we didn't have enough to do the roof. But luckily we found this tarp in a dumpster. We were out a couple of months ago going through the local supermarket dumpsters looking for food, and there was this perfectly new tarp in brand new condition, and it's still in its packet.
I guess we wanted to challenge the idea that you need like a whole lot of high-tech tools and skills and knowledge to be able to build a house. I mean, that house is mostly built with a handsaw and a hammer. I think the main challenge we face is that neither of us have ever really built anything before.
I built a chook coop once.
Yeah, Rachel built a chook coop. I built a set of bunk beds once. We had to learn everything as we went. It takes it away a little bit from that professional need a whole lot of tools, need a whole lot of skills and a whole lot of different people. You need someone to lay the foundation, someone to build a frame, someone to paint it. The conventional building methods that are used, it's hard to imagine them being sustained more than 50 or 100 years in the future, just the amount of resources that they require and the importation of all kinds of things. We acknowledge that this kind of building can't really be sustained either. It's not an indefinitely sustainable technique, but using recycled materials and building much smaller spaces is something that can be sustained for a lot longer into the future. We live on a community, which means there are communal spaces for socialising. We have a communal bathroom, shower. For us, a house is really just a place to be able to have some quiet time in, a place to sleep in, place to store our personal belongings in. Living a more of a shared communal lifestyle means that we can get away with just a really small house because we don't really need it for all these other things. It's great to have built our own house. It's like more than just having built a house. The house is cool. Yeah, don't get me wrong, it's great. But to have developed the skills and knowledge to do it again and to like share that with other people, I'm just, yeah, chuffed about the amount that I've learned through doing that.
Land ownership can be a huge barrier for people looking to live this way, and some people who see this may think that it isn't possible for them because they can't afford to buy their own land. The community that Liam, Rachel, me, and four others live on is owned by one family, and they allow us to stay on the land rent-free in exchange for developing the property by building infrastructure, planting veggie gardens, and taking care of the place. I feel that more scenarios like this will start to happen, where owners of unused land invite people to live on their property to develop a community and to do something great with the land. The challenge is connecting land owners with people looking to live this way.
Even if you've got no skills and knowledge, you can kind of just do that yourself. And it's much easier, it's much more affordable as well for people like us who don't have a great deal of money. It's much more accessible. I could just kind of build a much smaller space and then share your other spaces with other people.
All right, you know what? I just remembered what the title of the show today was supposed to be. Now we've got Earth Wealth Pentathlon, which that's an event that we'll be organizing, but it ties in with the Jetsons. So I'm gonna retitle the program today: George Jetson and the Earth Wealth Pentathlon. Matter of fact, we're going to explain what the Earth Wealth Pentathlon is. That's the event that we're organizing. But the main thing I want people to concentrate on today are the Jetsons, okay, which was it's a cartoon, and some of us, I guess, baby boomers watched it, but. I think people need to go back. Matter of fact, I'll be watching videos of that of the cartoon probably at least once a week because what, in my opinion, we're living in the age of the Jetsons right now. And if people don't, because some of the things that you're going to see in the Jetsons, because when the cartoon originally came out in the 60s, okay, so some of the things that were in the Jetsons, which was in the Jetsons household, weren't available on the mass market at that time in the 60s, 70s, 80s, even so in the 90s. But they are now, like video phones where you make phone calls. All right, that was. That was normal during the Jets, age of the Jetsons, even the age of Dick Tracy. Dick Tracy had a smartphone back in the 50s or 60s. Excuse me, he had smart watches, so which you can use as a telephone. So we're going to take a look at the Jetsons because a lot of jobs that people have now, jobs/careers, they're not going to exist. A lot of them are not going to exist in the next 5 to 10 years. However, there's several jobs and careers that'll be that haven't been invented yet, but within the next 5 to 10 years, they will have been invented. And of course, there's some jobs and professions that have been around for thousands of years that'll still be available. So we want to take a look at that. So we'll be back right after this.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, so before we get into Earth Wealth Pentathlon, which that'll be a contest that we're organizing that you the listeners can participate in, but I want to lay down because this will play into it. I want to talk about the cartoon, the Jetsons. The Jetsons' first run cartoon, which was futuristic. Originally took place in 1962-1963. So we're talking about 60 years ago. I guess I was 5 years old, whatever. I was watching the Jetsons. Okay. Depending on your age. And you know what? You can go online right now on YouTube or Amazon and watch the Jetsons. Okay. Now, so if we go back to 1963, we're talking about, 60 years ago. All right. Now, George Jetson, or the Jetsons, the family was made up of George, the husband and father, Jane, his wife. He had a daughter, Judy Jetson. Son Elroy, they had a dog, and Rosie the robot. All right. Let's start with, now this is, once again, we're going back in the time machine 6 years. I was talking to a high school friend of mine last night, and he was recently, like in the last 2-3 weeks, he was out in Las Vegas, Nevada, and he placed the order for lunch or dinner or whatever. And his server, the server who bought him his meal, was a robot. Something like in Star Wars, if we saw that movie, R2-D2, his server was not a human, but a robot. So, like I said, we go back 60 years with the Jetsons. That's what I'm saying. We're living in the age of the Jetsons. And I want to rate lateness to a show I just watched. It took me about a month to binge watch it, called Shameless. All right. But in any event, and Shameless, one of the storylines in the TV show, the American version of Shameless, because there's a British version as well. The American version of Shameless, starring William Macy, essentially one of the underlying themes, because they had many themes in Shameless, was this is contemporary. It takes place during the pandemic, where. And it's still happening, where a working-class white family, or they consider themselves, now these are terms that they identify themselves with. These are white folks that they said that they live on the south side of Chicago, and in their neighborhood, they call their neighborhood the ghetto. This is a family of white folks. That's the term they used in a TV show called Shameless. And the neighborhood, practically all white, was getting gentrified. It's a fascinating thing there. So the reason, and they were having problems because, you know, they're trying to make ends meet or whatever, that they need to learn how to get into the age of the Jetsons to keep up so they can remain living the way they're living. Because, you know, you got people coming through there that are buying homes for $200,000, $300,000, and then they just want the land, so they're knocking down the house and then they're building something else, and the tax base goes up. Anyway, let's get back to the Jetsons, because I think we need to look at the Jetsons and other cartoons and or movies and TV shows that go back 60-plus years, because they give you a glimpse of what's happening right now and what's going to be happening within the next, setting the tone for the next 5 to 10 years or more. So you won't get left behind. All right. So George Jetson, that's a family. Jane, his wife. Judy, his teenage daughter. Al Roy's son, he's got a dog. And Rose, the robot. Like I said, a friend of mine was just out in Vegas. He ordered a meal. His server was not a human being. Because human beings get sick. Human beings take off from work. Human beings complain. Human beings want a union, which means if there's a union, the food, whatever, it's going to cost more money. So Rosie the robot is non-union. Okay. The server who served him his meal in Las Vegas, about 2 weeks ago, non-human, doesn't complain, always, just charge her up and then have somebody give her maintenance, and then that robot server that served his food is fine. And if you don't have a robot in your town serving you now, trust me, it's coming soon. All right. So let's get to George, because as I break down George, and I'm on Wikipedia with this, this is what your future, anybody who's within the sound of my voice, this is what your future is headed towards, which I think is all good. All right, George J. Jetson is a fictional character and is a 40-year-old head of household, the Jetson family. He is the husband of Jane Jetson and the father of a teenage daughter, Judy, elementary school-age son, Elroy. All right, so George brings in the only paycheck. George has got to support himself, his wife, a teenage daughter, his son Elroy. They've got a dog. That's five human beings. And excuse me, four human beings, George, four human beings, a dog, four beans that eat, okay, because a dog eats, and then maintenance for Rosie. So a household of six. George, he's the only paycheck in the house. He also has, they also have a place to stay, and we're going to take a look at the housing of the Jetsons. And he also has a car. All right, we'll get to the, well, transportation, I'll put it that way. All right, now, George resides with his family in the Skypad Apartments. And if you go online and put in Jetsons housing, and you can see what kind of housing that he lives in, it's an apartment building on stilts, all right, in Orbit City, in Orbit City, all right. In the future, with the trappings of science fantasy, okay, depictions of American life in the future, such as the robot servants, which they, robot servants are here, including RoboCop is here. It's not, the RoboCops that exist now are in beta testing. They don't look like the RoboCop in the movies, but they do exist. All right. Flying saucer-like cars. Now, flying saucer-like cars, drones are here. New York City, I was just reading this less than a week ago. New York City is going to test, do beta runs on using drones for basic controlling functions. And really, cameras that we already have out here, you know, traffic cameras, all right, basically, you put wings on those and flying apparatus, which make them into drones. That technology is here, and it's essentially in beta testing form right now in various cities around the world. Okay. Let's see, moving sidewalks. Okay, all the apartment buildings are set on giant poles resembling Seattle's Space Needle. Okay, the ground is almost never seen in the Jetsons. Let's see. Now, the Jetsons, the movie, is suggested that Earth is extremely polluted, thus everybody lives in the sky. Food for thought, people. All right. George Jetson. Let me see. Let's get to his professional life. Okay, George complains of his heavy workload, which is pushing a button as many as five times for 3 hours. So George's work day is no more than 3 hours long. Not an 8-hour day, but a 3-hour day. And he works for no more than 3 days a week. So now, and he makes enough where, let's see. So he works no more than 3 hours. He works 1 to 3 hours a day, and he works at best 3 days a week. So we're talking about a 15-hour, three times three is not, he has a 9-hour work week. Now, since this pandemic, you know, a number of people now can work remotely. They might have to go in the office twice a week, maybe three times a week. They're still putting in their 8 hours a day. Now, there's one guy, I think I mentioned this story earlier this year, and he works, he's got, I look maybe, at least five full-time jobs. No. He's got 10 full-time jobs. I think 10 full-time jobs in 11 different cities, or 11 jobs in 10 different, something like that. Earns over $1.2 million a year, and it's all done from home. He's got like 10, or he's got 10 different laptops, one laptop for each one of his jobs. And he works remotely from home. And that's, I had to look at the term on that. But you have people doing that now. So, if you can, and we'll cover the Jetsons more in detail, let me see. Ray George, I'm trying to get more on George Jetson. So that's where we, drones exist right now. They're already delivering packages to some people via Amazon's. Drones are doing some of those. They haven't showed up at my door yet, but I'm sure it's on its way. But like I say, there are people now that are, there are servers now. So a lot of the jobs that exist now will not exist 5 or 10 years now. However, there will be other jobs that human beings will be needed for, and they will, whatever those new jobs are. Because George works for Spacely Sprockets. So his boss manufactures these sprockets. And, makes his money that way. Okay, let's see. What is there about George Jetson? Okay. Now that was on the Jetsons. Trying to find out, because I think I read the Jetsons. There's at least 2 Wikipedia articles on them. Let's see, the original 24 episodes ran, beginning on September 23rd, 1962, continue on to September 23rd, 1963. Okay, let me see, George. All right, George works in... Orbit City. He lives in the sky at the Skypad Apartments. Okay, wait a minute. I'm trying to get more on George Jetson. Well, let's see. Let's go to Jana's wife. Let's see. George's wife, Jane, is 33 years old. She's a mother of 2 children, and she's a homemaker. Because she is younger than George, she would have been only at the time, 18 when she got married to George. At the birth of Judy. Let's see. Jane is obsessed with fashion and new gadgetry. Let's see. Jane, they have gadgetry at their house that prepares meals. So the way we're used to cooking food, due to technology, Jane she has gadgets cook food now. And we're not talking about microwaves either. Let's see. Back to George. George is assigned by Mr. Spacely, his boss, to supervise a project that involves robots drilling through the surface of the Earth. All right. Now, geothermal for heat, they use that in Iceland right now to heat a lot of their tall buildings. They use Earth heat which is part of Earth Wealth, and we're getting ready to talk to that in the morning. Let's see. George, I'm trying to... Okay, well, all right, yeah. Yeah, George works 3 hours a day, and he has a 3-day work week. So George works, and he complains about it sometimes. He complains about pushing a button on and off for 3 hours for a total of, for as many as 5 times, you know, but he's got a 9-hour work week. 9-hour work week. And now you've got people in 2023 that some of them have 6-figure days. Others have 7-figure days. You have people earning that right now. All right. So anyway, check out the Jetsons. We'll be back to visit them more often. Now let's go to, because what we want to do is link up, do this to Earth Wealth, what I call the Earth Wealth Pentathlon. And let's explain what Earth Wealth is. And we'll leave it there for today. Now I want you to get a visual of a football field. All right? Football field. And that's about the size of an acre. Now, acres are, you know, shaped different ways, you know, depending on how you buy it or whatever. But an acre is quite a bit of land. So Earth Wealth, I believe, this way, and I mentioned this the other day, there are various ways to measure wealth. Some people measure wealth through government-issued legal tender, you know, dollars, pesos, euros, RMB, whatever that country's currency is. Forbes magazine, they measure wealth in terms of money and net worth. Some people, depending on the culture, they measure wealth by how big your family is. So, for instance, let's say you're a billionaire in a Western country. All right. United States, England, Holland, someplace like that, Denmark. But you have no children. You have no family. And if you go to, be honest, maybe Colombia, which is I would say they're developing, but it's a westernized country to a high degree. Or somewhere in Asia or Africa. And although your spreadsheet says you're a billionaire, but you have no family, particularly children, you're considered a poor person because the way many of them measure wealth is in terms of children. The bigger the family, the wealthier that person is, point blank. All right? Others measure wealth by family, as well as how many goats or cows or oxen, or how big is the family compound. So wealth is measured in different ways by different people. All right. One of the primary ways that I measure wealth is in Earth Wealth. And I think you can connect everybody to Earth Wealth because it's so abundant. All right. So, and I'm going to simplify this as much as possible. Like I say, visualize a football field. That's about an acre. Now, an acre, let's put some numbers to this. An acre is 43,560 square feet. 43,500, that's a lot. Go out here and walk 43,560 square steps. You'll get a workout. Okay. So an acre is 43,560 square feet. Now, let's look at this, and let's imagine you're looking at an acre of forest, maybe an acre of the woods near you, or a vacant field with weeds growing on it. That's an acre, but it's earth wealth. And let me break it down, because when you're looking at this, and it might just have trees on it, all right, could be desert with tumbleweeds or low vegetation on it, but an acre is an acre. I'm going to break this down into 10 things that are visible to the naked eye when you're looking at an acre of land. Now, of course, it varies from acre to acre, but let's start out with something that's not necessarily in plain sight, but it's there. So let's say you're looking at your some woods near your property or your home or in a park near you or whatever, and you've got some trees there and whatnot, and below the surface of what you can see on the ground would be groundwater. Groundwater is earth wealth. Now, doesn't seem sexy to people, but think about it. Think about if you had your own private access to groundwater and you never had to buy bottled water again. You would never have to pay a water bill coming from a municipal water source. You have your own anybody within the sound of my voice can have that. But here's the earth wealth part of it. Now, the earth wealth, the groundwater is wealth. It's earth wealth. But let's put some numbers to this to see how abundant this is, because I want you to start taking a look at a lot more differently. I'm trying to get my phone to cooperate here. All right. Now, so let's get out our calculators. All right. We already know that an acre is 43,560 square feet. Now, under that, you're looking at this flat, just looking at this ground, and it has some vegetation on it. So now, if it has vegetation on it, bushes, trees, and all that, and nobody's watering that, no human's doing that, that's earth wealth. That's Mother Nature that waters those plants, and it takes a tremendous amount. Plants take up drinking a lot of water on a daily. But let's relate this down to you, the human being. So you got 43,560 square feet of water below the surface. And how many, here's the question is, how many liters of water are in an acre? Well, it's 102,790 liters. That's how many liters make up, are in an acre of land. We had Reba on here like Monday and Friday of last week. The Booth settlement, family settlement. Now let's do some math with that. They've got 300 acres, so let's multiply 300 times 43,560. They've got 13,068,000 square feet of land. Now, let's just take one of the groundwater, multiply that times 102,790, There's over, well, there's, to be exact, give or take, 1,343,259,720,000 liters of water. Just capitalizing on that one distinction of earth wealth, their whole family could be set for generations to come. Now, that's anybody within the sound of my voice. If you find an acre of land, you can do the same thing. You can have that same potential and then just learn how to tap in on it and monetize it. That's earth wealth. Well, that's potential of, you know, taking the groundwater. Right now, also with earth wealth, and if you're on Blog Talk, we have this in our program description today, just to attend, and we'll go through this topic throughout the year here. Because a lot of us are walking past it daily, don't even recognize it. Driving over, don't recognize it. All right, so you people that want reparations and you're looking for the gut, you can get this without the gut. I'll go out and get my own 300 acres and get my own trillion acres of, that's just groundwater. Another source of earth wealth when you're looking at an empty field is the forest or the floor, the ground. Because the ground, which has vegetation, that can be monetized. If there's dead leaves on there or dead tree branches, you can collect all that and you convert it into biofuels. Biofuels can heat your home. It can cook your meals. You can probably even run a car if you know how to process it right. Then there's sunlight, daylight. Sunlight and daylight, if you got some solar panels to harness it, can convert it into electricity to power your home, to charge up your Tesla or any electric vehicle that you might have or will have. Then there's wind power. Once again, vegetation where you can feed yourself, trees, tomato plants, whatever, vegetation. Habitation, if you got the right skill set, you can make your own home. I had an uncle, and we all had uncles and ancestors who knew how to go out into the woods and source their own building materials, how to take, identify the right tree and make their own lumber and then build their own house. That's what's sitting out. They did it from earth wealth. Let's see, we're up to, all right, seven. That's the seventh distinction. Eight, physical space. Nine, air, which goes to wind. And 10, when it rains. When it rains on that 1 acre, you're going to get at least 43,560 square feet of more water. That's just off of 1 acre. Now, there are probably some other distinctions here, but those are just 10 basic fundamentals of what's sitting on that empty acre of land, which people walk by. It's amazing that, what this is a term, you're walking past pennies to pick up, though, you're walking past dollars to pick up pennies. I'm saying you're walking past billions, possibly even trillions, to pick up pennies. I know it's a controversial topic, reparations, but you got people walking past billions and trillions to fight for reparations. When anybody within the sound of my voice can buy an acre of land. Now, in depending on where you buy it, it'll be more expensive than other places. I mean, the more, like, if you want to buy an acre of land in New York City, Chicago, someplace like that, it's going to be super-duper expensive. However, if you go out to a lot of the rural counties that exist in New York State or the rural areas of the world, wherever you're living right now, go to those areas, you can buy an acre of land for dramatic, you know, some people have picked up an acre. I've bought an acre of land for as low as $200 an acre. Now, granted, there's no bus services. I'm all right with that. The nearest Walmart is 2.5-3 hours away. I'm all right with that. Just give me my earth wealth, and I'll handle the rest. But anyway, so we're going to organize an event called the Earth Wealth Pentathlon, and I'll explain more about that. It'll be based on an event called the Solar Decathlon, which, you know, we'll go through that, Wednesday, maybe tomorrow. All right, but in any event, okay, so like I said, we're in the age of the Jetsons. We're not full on, but drones are here. George Jetson lives in an elevated apartment house on stilts. Tree houses are here. Tree houses are a thing now. Okay. I don't know if they can tax tree houses yet, because, you know, I guess it depends on the county. It's not on a concrete slab. So, check out the Jetsons, because a lot of things, like say, that happened 60 years ago, don't exist now. And there are more things coming. Okay, all right, that's enough of my rant for today. I'm going to the phone lines here. 309 area code, your mic is open.
Good morning, L.A. I'm actually driving.
Good morning, Chris.
Probably hear the background. I like the analogy of you using the Jetsons and them being on stilts. Plus, you know, seeing the automated things, and, you know, somebody had a robot delivering food to them. You know, these are real things that are happening in our lives today. Now artificial
right.
intelligence on top of it. Holy smoke. You know, and here comes Apple. They came out with their new headset that shows virtual reality all around you, but also gives you the connectability to the internet, giving you all the information of things that are happening around you. Just like the sci-fi movies that we've been watching, you know, that even back to Avatar right here, something recent. And showing
right.
that screen right in front of them, that's actually, that's life now. And
right.
it comes down to where they're getting wealthy to give it to you, but you're going to play with it. So if life's going to be a game, why don't you make it Monopoly?
Right.
Right? I mean, we're trying to teach people Earth wealth, you know? Sitting there listening to you telling you how much water, and that's just 1 cubic foot of water on that land. Now, your well is going
right.
to be deeper than a foot deep, but you ain't stuck
True.
In mud and trying to get that water. So there's a lot more water there, and guess what? It's not going to dry up, because it's going to continue to fill in, because there's a natural spring that runs under the world here, you know?
Right.
Water goes somewhere,
right.
and that's the part where I see a creek right over here. It's called the Mackinac River.
Okay.
But where it starts is in the middle of a cornfield. I'm not kidding. It's water
okay.
runoff from all of the cornfields, and it turns into a river that's 40 feet wide and anywhere from, you know, 4 feet deep to 12 or 15.
All right.
So I watched it grow right out of a cornfield, though, right down the road from my house. And,
okay.
But you go down the road, you know, another 20 miles, but you can actually get in there and go fishing. Take a canoe and take off or go walking. You know, but to see that, that's created from what hits the top of the ground. That's that water runoff.
Right.
And so, you know, the farmers, they're utilizing that, but they created something that wound up, if you put a paddle wheel across it, it will create energy.
Right.
So there's even ways with that creek turns into that river. It's called the Mackinac River because it's a river. But I ain't kidding you, it starts where it's dry. There's nothing there. It's unbelievable. That little trickle of water really makes a difference when that water never stops running.
Right, right. Chris, now you can build buildings on stilts, right?
Oh, definitely. In 2005, I built a 2,500 square foot home right where the eye came across for Hurricane Katrina in Purlington, Mississippi. It's in Kings Harbor Subdivision on the corner of Tampa and Daytona Street. And that house is 10 feet off the ground, and we put it back on the stilts that it was taken from. Now, if you do Google Earth that and look, why don't you go ahead and look on down the coast there and just follow the ocean and see how many stilts are still standing without a house on them. So,
okay.
It's kind of scary to look at the Gulf Coast on what it is today from what happened, you know, 18, 19 years ago. You know, we're coming up on August. You know, of course, we got more storms that are coming. I know there was one brewing out in the Gulf. I haven't heard any more. I haven't watched the news to see what it wound up being or what it still might be. But, you know, never know what the next day is going to bring. You know, Mother Nature is very unpredictable. They try to predict it. That's why it's taking so long to become weathermen, right? But at the same time, they try to predict what's going to happen in the future. But when you look at the stock market, the futures are what people gamble on. So should we be gambling on our future? I think we are. If we are, we need to make sure it's a sure bet. So,
right,
you know,
I agree.
I think Earthwell is a key thing, because even if you're not making money from under the land, you can make money from on top of the land.
Right.
And not only give a living space, but create life. When you create life on land, it turns into monetary gain too.
Right.
So, as you create food, it's either you're eating it or everyone's eating it. And when you talk about, you were talking about the wealth of someone throughout the, you know, throughout the world, you know, whether they be a billionaire and be alone, or if they had 19 kids and they're wealthy because they have all of this family wealth. And the thing is family wealth needs to be educated. Because if you got 19 people, we already seen a family of 19. What'd they do? 19 different families have now came in to start a city in Georgia.
You're absolutely right. 19 families are building their own city. You're right. And you're right. I like
so
the way you put that.
Liberty,
family
Georgia.
Wealth. Yeah, you're right. Family
now,
wealth.
They're looking at it. Right. That's family wealth. But guess what? It's not just your family. We're talking about 19
right.
different families. Well, guess what? Do you live in a community? Well, guess what? I guarantee you're not related to your neighbors. You might know one or two of them you might be related to, just because you might have that kind of family niche. More than likely, you moved away from your family. So now, your family's the people around you. It's who surrounds you. And I think that's the thing Liberty Georgia,
another caller,
their initiative is teaching people. You don't have to be blood to be able to treat someone as they are. Because they're turning into it as you know, a family unit that is creating wealth. I mean, what they're doing, they're living cheaper than what they were living before. They're creating more opportunity than they ever had before. And it's by utilizing their resources of what they had before. So they had money. They had that life where they lived in the city and they paid that exuberant amount. But when they looked at the exuberant amount, what did we have when Miss Angela came on the show? Miss Angela turns around and says, take $500 and go get started.
Right.
You know, you don't have to start with a lot. You can start with a little. If you ain't got 500, go find five friends that have 100 apiece. Because now you got social equity, right? So now you're building something together that's going to make all of you something. And if it comes down to it, go each put in 100 on another one and buy it for the other one. So you pay it forward. And that social equity, I mean, that is the root of what you put upon the world. And I thank you for it. Because you do, Ed, you're very eloquent when you speak. And I enjoy listening to you. You know, I'm just sitting here on mute, you know. But at the same time, you know, I wound up getting my heart just filled with joy today, and I shared the link with you on your text message.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to get that on here for tomorrow. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm going to get it on for tomorrow.
I'll tell you what, you need to just start your show out with that.
All right.
That is a nine-year, I'm going to build it up a little bit. That is a nine-year-old speaking on a TEDx stage. And he is amazing. So it is very inspiring. It's everything that I envisioned to see. I saw it today, and I had to share it over there with you.
We're going to play it tomorrow morning. It's usually started at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we're going to include that in our morning, you know, our morning startup tomorrow morning. And thanks for that link.
Yeah.
I haven't listened to it yet, but you said TEDx, that did it for me right now, a nine-year-old. So we're playing that tomorrow. We'll play it at the beginning, and we might play it again during the podcast as well. So that'll be at least twice tomorrow.
I'll tell you what, man. That young man educated me. He educated me. He was amazing. He's an inspiration. But all of the children out there are. We just have to listen. We have to also give them the opportunity to know that they create with their mind. And the things that they're thinking ain't all wrong, just because we might not know that it's right. You know, there's a lot of things that a lot of people don't know. I get educated from you every day. So... I look forward to what you bring to the table because of who you are. You sit there and research things to come on and educate people with your own time. And that's a rarity. You know, that's one reason I was hoping, you know, if people would take notice to if they just gave up 8 hours. Now, you're playing with your calculator. I haven't done this, so I'm wondering how many minutes are in 6 months or 8 months. I don't, you can say eight months.
You say how many what now?
How many minutes are in 8 months?
Okay, well, we got, we know there's, let's just do this, I'm sorry. We know there's 60 minutes in an hour.
24 hours in a day.
And it's 24,
and we'll
so that's
30.
That's 1,440 in a day. And you said 6 months, so 6 months is 180 days.
Right.
Oops. All right. 1440 times 180. So that's 259,200 minutes.
Okay. Now, how many minutes are in 8 hours? We have 60 in an hour. So 60 times 8.
Yeah.
540 minutes.
Right.
You know what?
Go ahead, because you're making me think about Toyota right now.
If you would take 540 minutes out of the, how many did you say? 240,000?
Hold it. In a day, it's 1440 times 180. So that's 259,200 minutes in 6 months.
Okay, so we'll just round it to 240,000.
Right.
240,000 minutes. I need everybody in America from 8 to 88 to volunteer 540 minutes. You can do it in your house. You can do it outside with others. But I need everybody to step up for 540 minutes out of the next 240,000 minutes you're going to be alive for getting our people off the street and on their feet, getting everyone that's hungry already has a house, but maybe they don't have food. It's time to get them the food. And if everybody made this action, I asked a mathematician if I was correct, and he said yes times two. So that means only half of you have to do it to make it happen. But imagine if everybody does it. We might be able to do it sooner. So it's real. The building materials there, the greenhouse technology's there. The gardens are there. Anything that is needed to be is there. It's whether or not you are. And we need people to commit. We need to know who you are, how old you are, and where you are. That is the key ingredient to get started. And
okay.
By looking at those numbers, and now that I know them, I won't forget them. But 540 minutes will change everything you see today, and it will never be the same again. Is it worth it? I guess it's just a question for the people that are listening, you know. Is it worth it? Because we have a lot of wasted time that we do. And I would give 540 minutes without even thinking twice about getting paid for it. But the payment that's going to come is to know your children are never going to suffer for nothing again. No more food problems. That would
right.
be amazing. What if 8 billion people did it on the planet?
I'm
telling you. They
I'm just,
talk about
you're making
this,
me think
you know,
about... Next time I talk to Reba, because Reba's got, this is just a conservative number. Reba might be listening. I don't know, but in her on that. Oh, well, let's take one person per acre, so that's 300 family members, and I'm sure she's got way more than that. But imagine 300 family members and let's say they produce one product per minute. Now, here's another family, the Toyota, you know, the auto and motorcycle manufacturer. Toyota produces or manufactures one car. They 29.9 cars per minute. They manufacture one 29 cars per minute. So imagine if just one family member, you got 300 of them, if they produce one cupcake each per minute, like 300 cupcakes per minute, 300 doghouses per minute, little things, 300 birdhouses per minute, 300 tiny houses per minute. You know, that's just what one family member on each one of those acres, and they had an operation set up like that. Imagine the wealth that's coming from 300 family members. That's it.
Let's look at this while you're playing with your calculator. Let's go off facts that we know right now. In an 8-hour day, times 70.
Okay.
That's 56, right?
That's 560.
Yeah, 560. But all right, so we got 560 man hours, and we build 5 houses a day out of that. So that tells you that there's 105, 110, 110.
You got 560 hours. How many houses are you building within that time frame?
I can build 5 of them, and that means it takes 110 man hours each one.
Right. So you're coming up with like 2,800 houses?
Yeah. So here, I wanted to throw, you know, just some simple, you know, little things out here. We're just playing with numbers right now, but that's a real fact.
Right.
That's happening today in Tennessee. That's what's getting produced. Now, if we look at that and say it had an average cost of $30,000 was what was being brought in. So let's times that by, you know, times 5, we need 5 times 30,000, 150 grand.
Right.
Let's take that and divide that by 540. Actually, no, we'll just cut that in half. So say 75,000 divided by 540.
Okay, divided by 500, you said 40? 540. Okay, that's 138.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so $138 an hour was being made.
Right.
Every day in Tennessee. And that's if half of it was material and half of it was labor.
Right.
And that's normally what it is. So normally when I'm putting on material, I'm usually getting what the material costs to put it on. Sometimes I'm getting paid more.
Right.
So if everybody looked at that, all right, we've got 300 acres in their Booth family trust. If each family member spent $10,000 to build an Airbnb on their 1 acre, they had it separated. They have each an acre. They have 300 Airbnbs. They would cost them $3 million. Those Airbnbs would bring in $1 million a month. So you're saying in 3 months, all of their Airbnbs are paid for. So the next 3 months, builds 3 more on each one of those properties, and they're able to keep some money in their pocket. So now they have enough money to start subsidizing their 9-to-5.
Right.
Now with the 3 that they just built, now we know that each one is going to pay for itself in 3 months. So in 3 months, those 3 have now paid for 9 more.
You know, Chris, tomorrow's podcast, we're going to take off. We're not stopping today, but tomorrow's podcast, I got the name of it based on what you've been talking about here for the last few minutes, Family Wealth. Because everything you're talking about, it is not a silver bullet, but a lot of families that might be struggling financially right now, if they would sit down and laying it out just like you've been laying it out, because the wealth is there within the family. They just have to work together. So tomorrow's podcast, the title of tomorrow's podcast is titled Family Wealth. And we're going to, you know, keep on going. We're not ending today, but keep on. Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about this. Most families don't necessarily get along. So
no, they don't.
If there's family members that are willing to put the effort in, and now that family member, maybe the one that didn't want to do anything, don't necessarily get as big a portion because now they're having to give a little more to the next. But now what that next needs to be is where you're figuring out your family office. A family office is a family of wealth that is between $50 and $100 million. And you never see any of the profit from that or nothing. It is for your future generational wealth. But this is how you create it. You can't create it alone, and most family members can't all get along. But the difference is maybe they can get along with some of them, and that way you work it out to where you don't bring in the cross threads until you all are able to have any kind of thread on you want. You know, when that family member realizes you do care, because you're now helping them financially get along and continue on, even your kids and your grandkids, they're showing that. So there's got to be a lot of growth when it comes to bringing in the family unit. The family unit likes to disagree. Okay, we need to take the diss out of our mouth so we all agree. So no more disrespect, no dishonor. We don't talk about the past and what people have done. We talk about the future and what you're going to do.
Right. I agree. Hold on, Chris. You got to take another call here. Hold on.
Okay.
Eric Cole 410, your mic is open. Eric Cole 410. Eric, you might be 410. Oh, you might be on mute. Eric Cole 410, going once. We'll just leave his mic open. He could have stepped away. All right, continue on, Chris.
Yeah, that's fine, yeah, because we'll just mention out his area code here every minute.
Yeah, 410, anytime you want to speak, just speak.
Yeah, you can definitely interrupt us. So we'd love to hear from you, and anybody else that wants to call in. LA is about to share the phone number.
Yeah, 619-768-2945. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm driving by right now the old projects here in Peoria, Illinois. And they have them all
closed.
Oh,
I've been through there a few times.
Well, I'm right here at, I'm trying to remember the name of this place. But it's right here in downtown. Now they're going to tear down all of the old buildings. They're building new ones in the back area where they had some kind of play areas and different things. They utilized that and they started building. Now they built it all out of wood. They're paying to have it done. It's not being built by that community. Think about the people that were in that community that are on Section 8 that can't make money, because if they make money, they're going to lose their Section 8 benefit. So they're not getting the opportunity to build their home that they're about to move into. To me, that's not right. So Section 3, we need to educate people on. We do. We need to get to speak about it. Section 3, now, if you were in that same apartment complex, you're having your stuff paid for, well, Section 3, they want you to get the technical training. They want you to get the on-the-job training. And now you have the ability to build your own home.
Right.
Come on now. Now we're giving people some pride. And when you look at the communities that need it the most impoverished communities, I want to bring them to prosper. And that's what this is about. You know, how can each person on earth prosper? Well, we do that by social equity. We need each other. And the people that have no one needs to realize they have everyone. If they have everyone, they wouldn't feel lost. And you're going to get that out of that TEDx talk. I've been sitting here getting my TEDx talk ready. And this kid, I want to stand on stage with him. Because he is the whole reason that I'm doing what I'm doing. And what I love is he's been doing it his whole life. He is an inspiration, just like every other one of those motivational things you play. And
right.
I want people to realize your children are the solution to every adult's problem that you are inheriting to them. So I'm speaking directly to every adult out there. If you don't make a decision about something the government's doing, you are not making that decision. You're leaving it up to someone else. If they don't make the right one, whose fault is that? It's yours for not getting involved, not putting your parts in. There's no part too small, and your voice matters, and we need them all. Right now, I need you to share a message, 8 to 88. You know anybody? I imagine you know a lot of people. You know, and then you're going to meet a lot of people you don't know. But here's the thing. As you share that message, you need those people to be reaching out to the 8 to the 88. That is the whole point. Everybody needs to reach everybody. If we could do that, we will change the world, because the human race will evolve. We will evolve. If everybody got the same message on the same day, we would all evolve and never be the same. Because now we've got something that we can connect with there, and we have these abilities for all of us to do it. All of us are playing on all these platforms. Let's not just play on the platform. Let's be with a purpose. That platform's there for a reason. It was created by someone for you to embrace and be able to become more than you are by learning what other people are sharing. But to me, if we could make sure there was no hungry child, no hungry adult, I want to tell you about it. That's what I do. I get up and I anticipate my day of waking up, because I got joy in my life. Even though I don't enjoy what I see, I don't enjoy the reactions of people, because I don't like people to say things they're not going to do. You know what I mean?
Right.
So when you say things, you do what you say, and you say what you do. And that's what I try to live up to every day. But also, I try to show people that, look, you don't have to give me a promise, but I do promise you this. I'm still going to be here tomorrow, and that opportunity is still going to be here. But you're going to have a choice of whether you get to take it. But when people make those decisions for people, now we got a problem. And that's happening repeatedly, over and over again, for all of us. You know, I've been finding out about some of these laws and some of the things that happen. You know, if you got paper money, I say turn it into gold. If you got any of it that you ain't spending, go turn it into gold. Go turn it into silver. I'm telling you right now, they just did digital currency. New York Bank just put out a digital currency. They partnered with five other banks, and now those are five of the largest banks. Now they are the largest bank because now they own the Federal Reserve. And come January, they can say money is no good. And if they say it, there's no debt ceiling. There's no debt. That paper ain't worth crap. We're just done. Give it to you. Now, every bit of money that you're going to have is going to be digitally transacted, and they're going to know where every dime is being spent. They're going to know what you're doing, when you're doing it, why you're doing it. There is some things that are happening right now that has happened in the past 2 weeks that is going to cause a civil uproar. And we are set up. I'm going to give you more facts. 80 years ago, there was an external war called the World War II. 80 years prior to that, there was the Civil War. 80 years prior to that, that was an internal war. 80 years prior to that was that other external war. It was a Revolutionary War, and that's when we were founded. Now, we are set up for the internal war. Every 80 years, there's a turnover of power. So we need, if we're going to turn over power, let's don't turn it over to the few. Let's turn it over to all of you. Let's all come together and actually do something right. And that's what it's going to take. You know, if you look at it at, we got the right wing, we got the left wing. Okay. If all the power was on the right wing, you would fly in circles. If all your power was on the left wing, you'd fly in circles. But if you have right. your body and the head level-headed, being able to look right, look left, and utilize the power of the right and utilize the power of the left, you will have no weak. You will soar. It will cause propulsion. You don't get lift from on top of the wing. You get lift from underneath. So we need to lift up and do it right, and that's not tearing anyone down. So, I guess that's my little rant right today.
Reba just sent me a text that she hopefully will be calling in. Like say tomorrow's podcast, the title is Family Wealth. But if Reba, if you're in the studio, I don't know if she pressed, well, you know, she knows what to do. But tomorrow we're going to take a look at family wealth, get out our calculators, and because, you know what, a lot of family problems, at least the financial problems that can cause a family to break up, they haven't tapped into family wealth. The Toyota family, because Toyota is a family-based business. You know, although they're corporate now and everything, but they still have blood relatives that are within the Toyota. And like I said, they manufacture 29.9. Just may as well say 30 cars a minute. You know, an average car or motorcycle might have, you know, 30 parts to it. So, you know, they take in billions a year. I think Korean Air, that's a family-based business. But now you don't have to be in any big-ticket item to do that. You know, if, like I said, if we're using, you know, the Booth settlement, you know, let's say you, you know, let's say Baltimore. So you've got 300 acres of land, and let's say you, let's call it Booth Waterworks, or Booth Water. And, you know, let's say you just, I mean, pump out with, let's say, one liter of water that they can package and sell a minute, which we should. I'm just being super, super conservative. You know, that's $300. I mean, 300 bottles per minute. And 300. That, and you got what, 60 times an hour. So 300 a minute times 60, which is an hour. That's 18,000 bottles of water per hour. And let's say, let's give them an 8-hour workday, 144,000 bottles per shift. Let's just do it that way. Okay. Times three, 432,000 liters of water per day. And let's say you just do that. I'm not even going 12 months. That's 10 months out of the year. That's 4,320,000 bottles of water, all at a liter a bottle. And let's say you just sold it for $1 a liter. That's over $4 million a year. You know. So that's just with one, you know, one family on one patch of dirt somewhere out in the sticks. So family wealth. And that money could supply scholarships to people within the family that need a scholarship for, I don't know, trade school, college, whatever they want. They could also have their own family social security system where, okay, this day's profits on every Monday, we throw it into some for LaBoo's family hospitalization plan. I mean, there's only limits to your imagination. So let's see. I'm running low on my phone here, and I don't want to blank out on the phone, so Reba hasn't called in yet. So what we'll do, it's like, see, tomorrow we're going to take a look at family wealth. And most, and I would say, generally speaking, most families do not touch or tap into the wealth which is within the family. A lot of the problems that they, and I'm glad you brought it up, Chris, like the Freedom Georgia Initiative, it's 19 families. 19 families that pooled their money and bought 97 acres of land. Now, at least last time I talked to them, they were up to 502 acres of land. But then I don't know if they have additional families, but it started with 19 families, and I think each one of them got at least 2 acres. They got at least 2 acres. So they have an excellent blueprint that they had going. And I think one of the ways that they did it was they had campouts with, you know, tents and all that. But they, I mean, it's family wealth. And that started with just three Metro Atlanta women that they were friends, three friends. And but they went to and they got 19 families to pony up, and that's how they got the original 97 acres of land. So everybody, you know, probably some family squabbles could be mended and healed if they would ever get together and partner up and do a business joint venture for the benefit, the mutual benefit of everybody. In any event, before my phone runs out, we'll see you guys tomorrow, because tomorrow's topic, family wealth. Okay, wait a minute. Reba's here, I believe.
Hi.
Let's see. Reba, okay. We were about to sign off, and then you popped up. Okay. Hold on, let me see. Okay. Oh, man, I don't know if he can call back. I'm going to see if he can. Well, can anyway, we were talking about, I don't know if you heard, did you hear, I did an example of part of your family on that 300 acres with using water. Did you hear that example?
Yeah, certainly. And then you shared it with my son. You shared it with my son as well. Yeah, I'm just waking up.
No,
right
I'm
now.
Talking about today. No, I did it. I did one today.
Okay, no, I didn't. Yeah, I'm just waking up.
Okay, well, here's an example of it. If you took just one family member and put them on each one of the acres of the 300 acres, so you got 300 family members on 1 acre of land apiece. Okay, now the matter of fact, I'm gonna give a slightly different example. All right, you got one family member. You need 300 family members to do this because you're going to give each one of the family members 1 acre of land. All right. Now, each one of them has to drill, put a well for water on their acre of land. All right. Now, the business that they're starting is each person is going to be selling water. Let's call it the Boost Water Corporation. All right. Now, going back to the acre of land, we already figured out that an acre is 43,000, 560 square feet, and each acre has contains an acre has. Let's see. I'm gonna round it down. 402,000 liters of water. All right. So on 1 acre, there's 4 trillion. Oh, excuse me. Yeah, 4,443,120,000 liters of water. That's on 1 acre of land.
Oh.
So multiply that by 300, and we've got 1,332,936,000,000 liters of water among the 300 acres of land. So imagine if you just sold 1 liter of water per day. We're talking about, you know, all the whole corporation, the Water Corp, Boost Water Corporation. And that's just that's just one day's, well, you know what, let's just say 1 month. I'm being ultra conservative.
Wow. Okay.
Hell, that's over $1 trillion. That's in a day. That's just part of the wealth. That's part of the groundwater wealth. Now imagine what your family or any family can do if they would just get together, and this is any family, because that groundwater has been sitting there for a long time, and it's used, but that's what's sitting there now, and that's just one form of wealth, and that's just, now granted, you're going to need other family members to help with each acre of the land. So instead of having one family member on 1 acre of land, think about how many households that you can include in the business, because When's this Boost Water Corporation? You're going to need people to deliver it. You're going to need people to bottle it. You're going to need people to package it. You're going to need a family marketing department. All from just groundwater that you're sitting on top of right now. So tomorrow's podcast is titled Family Wealth, and we're going to take a look at different skill sets or resources within each family, with various families, actually, not just yours. And So people can see, wait a minute, I don't need to read another book. I don't need to buy another Amway kit. It's right here. We just had to sit down, and it could be cupcakes. It can be groundwater. It could be anything that you can think of. The wealth is family wealth. And if you don't have a family, then go out and find somebody that you can get on the same page with. You don't have to marry them or nothing like that, but, you know. So you guys are sitting on trillions. Yeah, you guys are sitting on trillions. And that's just now, that's groundwater. Now, when it rains, if you have yourself set up where you harvest rainwater, we're talking about in the neighborhood of $3 trillion. It'll definitely be over $2 trillion, but probably more in the neighborhood of $3 trillion. That's if you combine the rainwater with the groundwater.
My sons, I've explained to them what rain barrels are when I had my house, my first house.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be a nice project to go and just travel to set up a rain barrel on different land.
Right. So matter of fact, I would advise people out there who are single, if you're contemplating getting married one day, then I would suggest find a mate that will make a good business partner.
That's right.
First and foremost.
Yeah, other cultures do that.
Well, that's true. Yeah, because other cultures do it with arranged marriages.
Yeah, the attraction, you know, okay, and the compatibility is if you can build a life together.
Right. Yeah. If you can compatible on building a life together, that would be, I would say, start there first. Of course, most people in Western cultures, we do a little bit, we look at attraction and, physical attraction or sexual attraction. Westerners look at it that way. Whereas people from Eastern countries, or even Africa, they look at it from a more practical standpoint. And I guess the Amish do that, and the Mennonites to a certain degree, they're wired a little bit different. So, anyway, with Reba, so you are a de facto trillionaire. You just have to go tap that water. Oh, that groundwater there is.
Avalon, I think this water is called Avalon. A black man who has the water. I've seen it in the stores. I actually bought one. My friends, he and I went to visit his cousin, his father's cousin.
Right.
He actually had a case of those waters. And it makes you think, some people have made, a lot of money from bottled water.
They have made and still do make.
Well, yeah, but I mean, remember when they would just have people that they could just, they would bottle it up and you just pay a fee, I guess.
I don't know. Now, does your family buy bottled water?
We do. We don't drink tap water.
Okay. So what's the ball? Well, put it this way. You can totally eliminate bottled water if you just get your own little spring. And, you know, I don't know how much you spend per month or per year, but you can totally zero that out. And then just imagine if you had that and then you just sold it to family members. You know, our cousins, uncles, aunts, and all that. Ship it to them or whatever.
Hold on real quick. Hold on.
Let's see. All right. So tomorrow, people, our topic is family wealth. And 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
I'm back.
Okay. We're going to wrap it up for today because my phone is on 5%. So I don't want to be. What's that?
On Facebook, so
my son.
I don't think they quite get it.
Well, that's tomorrow. Tomorrow's the whole podcast. We're gonna go on family wealth, and
I'm gonna require that.
Yeah, tomorrow's on family wealth. So, matter of fact, I might invite 2, 3, 4 people on here. And let's just look at their family wealth and see. Because a lot of people are already millionaires or even billionaires.
Yeah.
Within the family, but they haven't, if you don't recognize the wealth within the family, you can't tap into the wealth and monetize it.
Right.
So, anyway, tomorrow's family wealth. Thanks for calling in. On that note, everybody likes to say, I'm on 5%. I got to go.